You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com. And streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
Yeah. Bing is for doing, and we are doing the Bates Motel After Buzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm here with my two favorite people.
Yeah.
the lovely duo, Casey.
Hi, everybody. Welcome.
And my main man, Nando Velasquez.
Oh, my God. I moved up.
Yes.
Everybody, he likes me.
Only for about another 40 minutes.
I'm doing six shows with you, so we gotta like each other. our good buddy, of course, Joe Sanfilippo, is out on assignment in lovely Vancouver, Canada, so he'll be back next week.
Yes, he will.
Maybe he's out. Oh, isn't that where they shoot? Isn't that Bates Motel up there somewhere? I think they shoot in Canada or in Vancouver.
Do they shoot in Vancouver? I know that it's supposed to, in the show, they're supposed to be in Oregon, but I don't know where they shoot.
I'm fairly sure they shoot in Canada, but the show's wrapped, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. Joe wouldn't be up there anyway.
I think they do a lot of shooting in Toronto.
Lots going on here in episode 3 for the Bates Motel. It's a very, very exciting episode, very revealing episode in a lot of ways because we finally get a peek into Norman's possible psychotic breaks here. You know, the whole character of Norman Bates in Psycho is the fact that he, you know, committed matricide because he impersonated, spoiler alert from those who haven't seen from 1960, spoiler alert, Norman Bates.
I can't cover my ears. I got headphones. I still hear you.
Norman Bates is actually the killer. It's not his mom. His mom's actually dead.
What?
She's been dead for some time.
Oh, my God.
So in the movie, he's impersonating his mom. He has these psychotic breaks, which allows him to impersonate his mom, where he's talking to himself as his mom. He sees a lot of crazy things, and he goes off and kills young ladies. So we start to begin to see in this episode some of that, some of the beginnings of that psychotic break, which is interesting. So I love origin stories. I'm a comic book guy, so I love origin stories. This whole series is one big origin story.
I feel like they're doing it so well too. Yeah. It's a delicate, you know, they're treading lightly, but they're doing it really, really well. I'm getting so wrapped up in this show. I haven't been this excited about a show. I do a couple of other shows. I've not been this excited about a show since Lost, which is ironic.
Because it's a Carlton Cuse show.
Yes, he is a genius.
Well, let's talk general impressions of the show. I mean, like, this is, again, for me, we talk about this being sort of, I mean, we feel like this whole, it's doing two things. We're setting up the origin of Norman Bates and Norma Bates, allegedly, but we're also setting up the story of this whole town and what would presumably be this season and the series. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really loving the way they're unraveling the world here, because we're getting a little deeper into the world of Dylan and the mysteries of the town, which has mysteries. Mm-hmm. The hotel and the Bates Motel has mysteries. The house has mysteries. We still haven't gotten into Norma's past, which seems to be full of mysteries, as we're finding out.
Well, they did address it because they mentioned that scar on her thigh, which she was putting lotion on last episode, where now something happened when she was younger, almost insinuating that she was abused.
Well, yeah. And Shelby did take a good look at that inner thigh. He was very much that? Oh, what you got there?
Yes,
so,
he did.
But yeah, so I really like the idea of us setting up this world. I'm really, you know, I got to give it to Carlton. He's and the gang and my man,
Freddie.
I keep butchering his name. Cipriani.
Oh, Cipriani. Okay.
God bless him. Our chances of getting him on the show are decreasing the more time that he mispronounces his name. But they do a great job of sort of unraveling the story and creating this world. I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I like the way they started the episode with Dylan and the famous. Now, did you guys both think? I thought that it was supposed to be almost like a take on Robert De Niro.
Yes,
with the gun in the mirror.
On Taxi Driver, the famous. Mm-hmm. You talking to me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought it was kind of like a. I didn't want to say an imitation, but.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It definitely was. What is it with boys and their guns?
Yeah.
And it gives them this powerful feeling. And then once they're in the mirror, it's like, you know, they can't. But it definitely, it says a lot. It says a lot.
I got a news flash. Dylan was not scaring anybody in that. He didn't scare anybody. I mean, gun and all in the mirror. He not one thing looked tough about that kid. But I'm sorry, Dylan, if you're listening. But
no, yeah. I understand his relevance as a character, though. I really feel like all of his input is, it's almost like he is the he's the audience's point of view,
right?
Like when he's talking to Norman on the couch, everything that he's saying is everything that the audience is thinking, and he's almost like the constant. It's if his character wasn't there, the show could just kind of spin out of control.
Sure.
But now that his character is there, he's the one going like, "This is all nuts, guys. This is, what are you guys doing?"
Yeah. Well, especially because they live in that insulated world. I mean, the Norman Norma world is really insulated. It's a super duper echo chamber to the 10th degree. I mean, they're in there talking to each other, yelling at each other, you know, hugging each other, kissing each other, doing the whole thing, being inappropriate, being appropriate. So, yeah, the son is looking at, like, we're all, like I said, the audience is looking at this, like, what the hell? So the son is like, why are you, what is, you don't have to, so I agree. It's, even though he's got his issues.
He does.
You know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll see about that. I don't know. What about you, Nando? Would you?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Well, general impression. All right, I'll save my thought about Dylan for a little bit later.
Sure.
But general impressions is it's really great how we're getting to see a little more behind the curtain, both in Norman's mind, so to speak.
Yeah.
And also a little bit more with the town. Some questions being answered. We know that the Potfields seem to have a lot more to do with the town than insinuated before. We see a little bit more. I guess with Shelby, what may or may not be true with Shelby, and what may just generally what may or may not be true in Norman's mind,
right?
I'm just loving this journey so far. But again, it seems like everything is very isolated, kind of like when you were mentioning before, like Lost. Like each of the stations had a different purpose. So it seems like what's happening in the house and in the hotel is very, very different than what's happening out in the woods, for example, or that shed, perhaps. And now it seems like Shelby's house seems to have something going on over there, too. It seems like everything has a story.
Yeah.
Well, I love the way the showrunners nowadays are just finding different ways to tell these stories, you know, and different ways to sort of tell a story. We talk about this on our Americans podcast when we talk about the use of flashbacks, which Lost sort of pioneered to some degree. They use a lot of flashbacks to tell the story in an interesting way. They do the same thing on the Americans. This one doesn't really use flashbacks, although it could, you know, use flashbacks because it seems to be one giant flashback. I mean, we know kind of how this thing ends. Yeah. So the whole show's a flashback.
I'd love to see flash forwards.
Yeah.
flash forwards. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. But what it does do is, what I love about this is, I think one of you mentioned this last week, was, you know, the use of the town. The town is actually becoming a character. The town is a character itself, and there's entire shows that sort of like talk about the mystery of the town. There's been a lot of pilots, a lot of failed shows, you know, that are to do with the town and the mysteries of the town. And so this is a show that's about Norman Bates and Norma and the house and the origins, but it's kind of really going to be about this town ultimately and the characters that come out of the town. So I think that in of itself is neat, and to layer that on top of what we have going on in that house, that echo chamber we talk about, layer that on top of these Norman interacting with these high school girls, because we've got a storyline with him and this sweet girl and the one with CF, layer on top of Norma outdating who knows, God knows who and who knows what. I mean, it's a lot of intrigue going on here. A lot of different ways to tell a story.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's really nice. I was shocked that they went with the storyline that he loses time. Is that something that was prominent in the movie? Did he actually forget what he was doing? Because I thought the whole time he was doing everything that he was doing in the movie Psycho that he was conscious and aware of what was going on.
No, I think the implication was he wasn't conscious or well. I mean, I think what we're seeing is the origins of the psychotic break. So I think that he's not fully broken or fully gone yet. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, it was literally, well, I guess it was losing time, because in the movie he literally would black out and he'd become his mom. So he would, and actually he'd be talking to his mom. So it'd be like, I'm not going to do it, but you know, yeah. Norman, get over here. Mom, leave me alone. Norman, shut up. Mom, I'm sorry. Like it's a lot, and it's just him in the room, you know? So it's a lot of that. So that's, I mean, I don't know how much of that he's blacking out. And then there's a famous, you know, line in Psycho, of course, where after he kills my girl in the shower, he comes, you know, he's like, mother, blood. What did you do, mother? And of course, it's him. So, and he doesn't realize that it was him who killed her because he thinks it was his mother. So yeah. There is a bit of losing time. I mean, I'm no psychiatrist or psychologist, apparently, clearly, but you know, I think that's what we're seeing.
So, this is my question to both of you, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. The scene with Norma in the hospital mm-hmm. with the doctor, and the doctor says, "Has he lost his memory before?" And she gives kind of an answer where you're not quite sure whether or not she's telling the truth, and then all the tests come back negative, and she immediately takes him out of the hospital as if, and I was thinking, now, has this happened before? She knows what's wrong with him, or was she just worried about the fact that there was a warrant that was out on, or there was a, they had a warrant, they had just searched her house?
Yeah. I think that was what we were led to believe, but I kind of agree with you that it is more there, that there's something else going on with Norman that we don't know about, that Norma's hiding or Norma's trying to keep hidden.
I think that she knows. I think that she knows 100% what's going on.
Yeah.
I 100% agree. She 1,000% knows. I think that you're right on both counts. I think she's really like that beat she gave was obviously like, yeah, this has happened before, but I'm not going to tell you that. Yeah. Or, oh, I was hoping this wouldn't happen before, because, you know, this is she obviously knows Norman. Now that'll come out later in the season. Maybe he did when he was 5, maybe when he was 7, maybe when he was younger this happened. And then, of course, I do believe that also she was genuinely worried about the cops searching the house.
Yes. Well, so. and also, like, when Norman talks about the fact that he kept Keith's belt, I thought that her reaction, based on the way her character has been going, I thought she would have been upset.
Yeah.
But she stopped, and she was very, very nurturing. Mm-hmm. So that, like, she immediately became a mother. I felt in this episode, Norman was more of the antagonist, and she was more of the protagonist, where in previous episodes, you always think that it's Norma that is kind of like that devious force. Mm-hmm. But right. it's not really the case, and it's interchangeable, and it's switching, and it always keeps you guessing. It's like where, you know, who's good and who's bad.
I think it's really interesting, that point, because I wondered about that too when Norman came down and gave that news. I thought, oh no, this is gonna go bad, she's gonna flip out. And when she didn't, I was confused, and I realized that, like, thinking back to the first two episodes, she hasn't really flipped out on Norman at all. Her reactions have been all manipulative, all passive aggressive, and she's only really flipped out on Dylan. I mean, we've seen Norma be crazy, we've seen Norma kill, you know, 2 people, mm-hmm. you know, at least. So, but we haven't really seen her yell at Norman yet, and I think that's kind of part of the relationship. I mean, that's the whole thing. She has this nurturing, caring, you know, protective relationship with Norman, and when she does have to get mean, it comes from a manipulative, passive-aggressive place, not a yelling and screaming place. Uh-huh. I mean, is that what you're...
I mean, what I'm thinking, and this episode just seemed very clear, especially toward the end with with Norman in bed and talking to his mom about the belt.
Yes.
That the mom that wasn't there. Well, it really is a case of point of view, as far as what the camera is shooting. Is the camera shooting a scene according to Norman's point of view, or is it mm-hmm. shooting a scene according to Norma's point of view, or is it shooting a scene that's supposed to actually be like you're actually in the room and it's actually the real thing that's happening?
I imagine that we'll get to that, because I think that, you know, when directors do that, there's like a physical choice they make, whether it's a two shot and we now yeah. can establish to the audience that this is happening, or whether it's a POV of Norman,
but yeah,
or certain things.
We're seeing a recollection of something. And this is a prequel, so technically we're actually seeing something that's supposed to be taking place in the past.
You're frying my brain, bro.
Well, it's supposed to be taking place in the past. It's a sequel. We know what happens in the future.
Right.
So we're seeing...
We're in the present, watching the future.
Well, we're watching something from the past that was shot in the 1960s, but they're iPhones, yes. and all the stuff, you know, so it's a little confusing. But I really do feel that sometimes when you're... It's kind of like talking in the first person or third person.
Sure.
You know, when you're talking to the first person, it can be very, very biased toward right. the first person who's talking. Right. But when you're seeing something in the third person, it's usually more of an objective. Like, just to go into comic books, since you love comic books, Mr. Origin Boy, like hey. The Watcher. Like the Watcher.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know you know.
Never heard of it.
Yes, you did. The Watcher kidding, yeah, watches. He knows.
Well, and Nando, something that you mentioned earlier in the screening room was after that scene with Norma and Norman, where you realize that Norma is a figment of Norman's imagination on the bed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned after that how, I mean, now what scenes have we already seen that were in his imagination? Mm-hmm. Now going back and all of these other scenes, it's like what was real and what wasn't, and it's cracked that wide open.
Yeah, and I wonder. I really hope they don't do it that way because I feel like that's cheating. I would like to believe that this is the first time that he's had this break, that the break has happened, and so therefore, you know, we're moving forward. Like I would love to believe that that's the case, but I don't, you know, I would like, I don't want to think that when I go back and be like, everything you saw was a dream. And I don't want to do that move, but I don't know. But I do want to get, let's talk about specifics. I mean, Nando, like what jumped out at you of this episode? What leapt out at you? What's your takeaways?
I wanted to talk a little bit about Dylan just because he is an interesting character. And a really good note that you said is he is kind of taking the persona of the audience in a way. His perception of the whole thing is something that we all can agree with. I mean, he's a little bit of a rebel, and right. He's obviously stirring the pot a little, or so to speak. I mean, we know that Norma and Norman are both a little messed up. So even when he came in last week and started calling his mom a whore,
right?
You know, you don't really say, yeah, she is a whore. No, you don't really think that, but at the same time, he's obviously seeing something based on what he knows, based on his experiences, based on their past, mm-hmm. that we're still not familiar with. But we know, even though we're not ready to call her any names, like her loving son, that we know something's off. We know something's wrong.
Yeah.
And like you said, that scene with Norman and Dylan sitting down together, mm-hmm. was pretty telling. I mean, it was a nice little bonding moment, but Dylan was acting normal. It's funny how he seems to be able to act more normal around Norman.
Alone.
Other than that little altercation last week, but that was because Norman saw the phone and said, and called his mom the whore. So that's when he went off. But other than that, they don't have a great relationship, as he mentioned in the woods to his partner in crime. But they do have, they can seem to talk to each other in a normal tone. And then as far as I wanted to bring up really quick too, because this also plays into the fact that he's kind of like the audience. I agree with you on Taxi Driver. I totally thought he was doing a Taxi Driver moment. Uh-huh. And then he started talking about Deliverance when he went out in the woods.
Yep. Oh.
Notice that while Norman is watching black and white movies, Dylan's referring to color movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah. So his reference point is a lot more modern than Norman is. So I think there's something really interesting there too.
It's not a coincidence that that's actually like everything is meticulously planned out in that character development. That they're like, this is what he's going to be. This is what he's going to do.
Yeah.
I like that he's a hunter. I like that we found out that he can kill pheasant.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that I enjoyed the fact that he was humanized this episode, because when he was talking to his partner in crime in the woods that oddly looked like the woods in Lost, mm-hmm. he was his partner in crime asked him where his mother was from and he couldn't answer the question, and then he asked him if he was close with his brother and he was like, not really. And then you know that he thought about it, because when he got home he took the time, he sat down with his brother and he wanted to bond with him. So I think you realize that he's human, because he's like, I don't have a relationship with my brother. I need to salvage that. You know, maybe I should do something good here while I'm guarding the pot farm. So.
And what about that? Do you think that, back to Dylan's character, I mean, so we know, you know, I'm still a little worried about his penchant for crime. I mean, is this just a need to sort of make money, and why you know?
Well, he seemed very disappointed when he couldn't get to do anything except for just sit down and watch a pot field all day long. But I think also he's obviously very green in the fact that he gets spooked pretty easily.
Right.
So when that Jonah Hill looking character freaked him out a little bit.
Well, we just assume that, you know, poor Dylan. I mean, cause he seems a little sympathetic, and I'm starting to like him a lot more. So we just assume that he's just this poor disenfranchised kid who doesn't have a father and his mom is a bitch, so he's out there doing dirt.
Yeah, well, I think he has a lot to overcome. You know, they have a messed up family, like they talked about beforehand. You know, there's just a lot. There's a lot going on there. But I'm really sad that my prediction didn't come true, that Nancy Drew didn't kick the bucket this week.
Oh, well, that's pretty quick for this week.
What is her name, by the way?
Emma.
Emma. Okay, because I've been referring to her as Nancy Drew ever since you said it last episode.
Yeah. Half audience is like, who? Nancy, who?
I'd call her Asthma Girl, even though I know it's not asthma. It just seems like it. So
they found out that these pictures in the book that Joe Sanfilippo absolutely loves this book.
Right.
He's obsessed with it.
He does.
Well, I mean, just that's a jump in, because I do want to get your impressions of that, too. But that book is available in full on iTunes. I just downloaded the whole sketchbook. So you can go on iTunes and download the sketchbook and look for your own clues and solve your own mysteries.
Absolutely. So, that's one thing that...
I encourage you all to do that.
That's one thing that Cruise, the producer, is so good at doing, is that making everything interactive and making... I mean, you can go in you can go to A&E.com as well and go... And they've got whole... You know, you can go to every single room of the Bates Motel and click on it, and it'll have, like, little clues as to, like, what is coming up next episode, this episode. So he's really good at making it interactive and you becoming... going into their world.
Right. And that was, he's as we talked about on the ride over, is he's one of the pioneers, or the pioneer, in sort of that interactivity. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, really quickly, we want to thank you, all of you guys, for watching and listening to us on iTunes. We really, really appreciate it. We're a new show, obviously. We started last week. We'll be here every week. Please, you know, download us on iTunes, rate us, tell us what you think, good or bad. We'd love to hear from you. But if you are going to rate us, it'd be nice if you gave us some fives, because we like fives. And Joe Sanfilippo loves fives. I love fives. Dua loves fives. Nando took a four.
Oh,
no,
I'm not as picky.
He likes fives.
I don't know if you've been looking at my dating life lately. But, paying attention to that? No.
He sets the bar low.
In all iTunes, we love you for you to download us on iTunes. And of course, you can watch us on YouTube if you want, or you can watch us live on AfterBuzz if you want to. And we'll all interact with you on Twitter as well. But iTunes is a great place to be. So just wanted to say that. So, Dua Casey.
Yes, sir.
Give me your takeaways. You started there. I interrupted you twice.
No, it's totally fine. I just wanted to, you know, touch base with the little Nancy Drew. I actually also wanted to talk about the belt, because I think that's really important. That's one of the pivotal things. I feel like the two most important things this episode was the fact that we learn that Norman loses time. There's something obviously wrong with him. He's starting to lose his temper. This was referred to in episode one, where he was getting into an argument with his mother. And she said, Norman, don't lose your temper. Like, this is a normal thing. It happens all the time. Don't do it. And so now we're kind of seeing what happens. So Norman kept the belt, to his mother's big surprise. And immediately his mother is like, all right, what do we do? And she goes to Shelby. And she, you know, she assesses the situation and essentially saves the day. She was the martyr. She sacrificed herself to save herself.
Wait, we'll call it that. Yeah.
So they did. I don't know if I looked away or what, but did they do it?
I'm sure they did. I mean, she came back so exhausted and late. She was so tired.
He was texting and calling her, and she wasn't picking up the phone.
He was picking up her iPhone.
Yeah.
What happened?
He's getting really worried.
He was totally trying to block her. With the phone.
Mom, answer. What are you doing?
Did you notice that he was asleep in her bed when she got home?
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
He was in her bed because he was probably so worried. And, you know.
All I saw was Shelby do that move with the inner thigh. And that's the only thing I saw. The whole, like, is that a bruise? Cut. And I was like, what happened? They do it?
don't get me wrong. Any guy that tells a girl, you know, I just want to take care of you, and there's all this nice stuff. It's like that. I mean, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So I was wondering how much of that Norma was actually buying into, and what are Shelby's motivations as well? Like, does he have an ulterior motive? Is he planning? Like, is he just thinking she's a really hot girl?
Yeah, I'll tell you what his ulterior motive is.
Because if. Like, he has to have something. Yeah. Otherwise, he's not a good cop. You know, you've known this girl, you've known this lady for how many days, and all of a sudden you're hiding evidence for her?
I think it's a small town. Shelby's just trying to get laid. Town. I think you're overthinking it. I'm a dude. Listen, you're overthinking this whole thing. What's his motivation? What's he thinking about? I don't understand. No. He's trying to get laid.
He's trying to get laid. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, yeah, I saw that a mile away. Please.
Yeah. I mean, she can, like, the belt, whatever. He's like, belt schmelt. Like, are we going to do it?
Yeah.
it's
in the trash.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, now that we've ironed that out.
I'm
so
just saying.
Can we cut? I know that we're running low on time. Can we cut to the end scene? That was pretty crazy. Was that real, or was that another figment of his imagination?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we think that Shelby's a good guy, other than the fact that he's a little horny. We think he's a good guy. He seems to be protecting Norma from, and said that that guy Keith that that assaulted her, raped her the first episode. Mm-hmm. He knows that it was a bad guy. He knows he claims Romero's a bad guy too. So
there's no chance that that's real. I think there's no chance. No.
Well, I mean, I don't think that there's a chance that it's real either, just because the image was the image that Norman's been obsessing about. It was a girl handcuffed to the to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, those are the images that he's been seeing at school, his school teacher tied up, like, I mean, all this.
Who has a, what kind of deputy has a sex room with a disco ball?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even know anymore. Well, I mean, I'll jump back to that.
It was all a dream.
I don't want this. I don't even know, but I'll jump back to that, because I do want to get my quick thoughts on Norman. Just what jumped out at me was obviously Norman. You know, this is the show, the character Norman Bates is about him. I talked about this at the beginning. We're getting to see the origins of Norman, these psychotic breaks. What I really liked about this is that now we're getting to see, in the pilot, we got the sense that Norman's a normal kid. He's a little off, you know, or we got the sense that, like, this is how Norman became Norman, because his mom's crazy, or
that's what I thought.
He saw these horrible things, and this poor kid, his mom is just manipulating him, and he just couldn't take it anymore, and now he just went crazy. But what maybe that's how the pilot was written too. But, you know, after episodes 2 and 3, especially in episode 3, they took a right turn and just said, no. Norman's got issues that had nothing to do with, you know, sort of, maybe even, who knows, with chicken and egg. Who knows if these came from his mother, or who knows if this were just some sort of psychotic things he was born with or whatever and developed. But he's got issues, and clearly they're starting to manifest themselves with the anger, how that manifests itself in terms of his blackouts. Yeah, maybe when he gets angry, he blacks out. Maybe that's what his mom knows that.
Or also with the pressure of, you know, if this has been under wraps or underwater for a while, but with the pressure of his father dying and also him hiding a dead body with his mother, like, maybe everything's starting to come to the surface now.
What it really feels like, I agree, what it feels like is that, feels very Incredible Hulkish, but when he gets angry, when he gets upset, he blacks out, and he like, it's an emotional thing. That's why mother's always trying to calm him down, like, calm down, Norman, calm down, because this thing where,
like, once he gets mad, it's uncontrollable.
That wasn't his temper in the classroom, though. That was his heart beating, because he was horny himself.
But notice he passed out. His reaction wasn't to go and try to kill anyone. True. His reaction was just fast. I couldn't take it.
I like how
he's an adolescent kid.
I like how when we cover The Following, we hear the heartbeats always because of Kevin Bacon, pacemaker.
Yeah.
And in this case, it's just.
It's really interesting to see, because now we can go back and know that scene on the couch when he's like, I didn't try to kill you. What happened there? Like, I don't. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, and we saw his reaction. We saw him, the look on his face, his face change, him go after him. He was definitely trying to kill him. So this is, and we've seen it, little hints of it in episodes 1 and 2. Where he's gotten a little upset and yelled at some people. We see it definitely in episode 3, where he gets upset at poor Emma and then really melts down on Emma. So, I mean, you know, the undertones too.
He gets mad so goofy, doesn't he?
I know.
He's so cute at being mad.
He kills you in the shower.
Exactly. It's like, even
not so cute.
I think that speaks volumes for Freddie Highmore and the way that he's playing this character.
Yeah.
Is that it's really, like, you can tell that he's getting mad, but he's so mad inside because he still wants to be like that it just starts, like, bubbling over and he can't.
Well, here's a question for you then. Why do you think he took the belt?
I don't know. I
mean, because, you know, serial killers like to have a little trophy, they say.
Yeah, maybe that's that. Maybe.
And that's possibly that. I have a theory, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Because it's connected to the book in a way. He was looking at the book. You were telling me, you know, who's looking at the book, and that's when he took the belt.
Yeah, with the flashlight.
So, and what's a better way to restrain somebody than using a belt?
Oh, wow.
So I feel like maybe there's a connection between his analogy with the book and the belt.
Yeah, I feel like this show is...
I'm sorry. I like this show, too.
Please.
I saw the belt as a connection to another connection to his mother, because the belt is... You know what,
Keith
wore, and he was the one that raped her, and like that whole downward spiral for the mother to kill Keith, and then that's just like another symbol, another token to hold on to his mom.
That's a really interesting point, because I was asking at one of the end scenes where Norma's actually looking at Norman again, and she's like, "Why would you take that?" And he looks at her and he goes, because I thought what he meant to say was because I'm sorry. Like, that was like he'd felt so bad that he wasn't there to protect his mother from that he wanted to keep that as a token for some reason. I mean, it's all no matter how you slice it, it's weird that he kept it.
Yeah,
for whatever reason. But
he was very upset about it, that line, like, you know, why, you know, when he's asking himself, like, you're so stupid, why did I do this?
Yeah, or maybe it's just
what's wrong with me? Yeah. This poor tortured Norman.
What's wrong with Norman?
Yeah, I do also like, just the last thing I want to mention on this thing is I do like how they did address on the couch again, how they did address the fact that he calls his mom mother, and more of the origin stuff. You know, that's one of the things that is a carryover from the movie, which is from 1960. Yep. Mother, and he still does it, which is obviously a callback, but. You know, I looked at the fact that they called that out. Like, why do you do that, dude? That's weird. He's like, no, she's my mother. So it's good they sort of address that, because otherwise it is weird.
Yeah, and we were also wondering, talking about origins, the movie that he was watching, we were also wondering what movie that was. I know that you were looking up and you'd, on previous episodes that he was watching, like Notorious and That Girl Friday.
This Girl Friday, that's what I read, yeah.
But this episode, I was curious, because I know that those all, and that that flower was back, just letting you know. That flower, Persian.
The flower that he gave to Bradley last week.
Bradley then returned returned and gave it to him. So I don't know if that's like an omen, but that flower was the Persian lily, which is like an omen of bad things to come.
Oh, the old Persian lily.
The old Persian lily.
the poison, the most poisonous flower in the. No, right? What's the other poison? It's poison, right?
It's a poisonous flower. Right. Very poisonous.
That's right.
Yeah. So how much time do we have, Marissa?
Well, we have like 5 minutes left, and I think we should go to. I know you have this segment. We can just jump that into our news and gossip, right?
Yeah, sure.
So let's go to news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Well. So I've got. So there's been a lot of controversy because Bates Motel has a PG-14 rating, and the Center for Culture and the Media Institute, along with the Parents Television Council, has been writing A&E and slamming A&E, and they have condemned Bates Motel for its sympathetic portrayal of a psychopath and its graphic violence in a show that is rated safe for kids to watch. A&E has not yet responded, but, and I'm just going to, I can touch base on this a little bit more to give you an update, but I did, watching the show tonight, it still has a TV-14 rating. So I was just looking up really quickly. Other shows that had TV-14 ratings were Breaking Bad, Lost, The Following.
Wait, Breaking Bad's a TV-14?
Breaking Bad is a TV-14, and they murder people and cook meth. So yeah.
That's crazy. Go ahead.
The Walking Dead is also TV-14.
What?
Yep.
Exploding brains and guts?
Yep. CSI, Mad Men. Yeah, right, but...
I've heard enough.
Nip Tuck, American Horror Story, and Sons of Anarchy are all TV mature.
All right. Well, so, clearly the line is, as always, with the thing with ratings, which is what drives people nuts, the line is not violence, the line is sex. Yeah. So, obviously, Mad Men, American Horror Story, and Nip Tuck are chock full of sex.
Well, Breaking Bad, in the pilot episode of Breaking Bad, there were some sex scenes
right.
in Breaking Bad.
There is, but not, I mean, well, that's, I'm not going to commit, but it feels like the line of demarcation is violence on this side is okay, sex on this side is bad. That seems to be the message we're giving America.
Yep. Yeah.
Which, you know, that's what Norman Bates thinks. Sex bad, violence okay.
Something as well, actually, Carlton Cuse said in an interview, the first 6 episodes of Bates Motel, they're actually, you will find Easter eggs that that are pertaining to Lost.
Oh, for the big Lost, for the Lost fans.
For a little something. So now if you've watched it, now you can go back and watch it again and maybe see something. I'm really curious, and I don't know if it's, you know, directly like Lost stuff. Like, hey, there's the record player from The Hatch, because that was the first thing that I thought. I was like, is that record player that's in Norma's house the record player from The Hatch?
Right.
Because that would be cool.
Or maybe something overt, like, let's go to the Hatch Burger. They're at the Hatch. The burger stand. They're at the Hatch.
Or like the carpet delivery people were actually like.
That's what if I was writing it. Thank God I'm not writing this thing. I'm like, I know. let's make the burger stand the Hatch Burger. I'm Joe Braswell. All right.
Fly Oceanic or something?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oceanic ad. The measurements of all the girls add up to the numbers.
Well,
or the ages or something.
So is that all we got? Is that it? I'm saying we're out of time. I mean, I'm supposed to make sure we got everything before we move on to predictions.
Yeah, I'll save some stuff for next week.
All right.
So. I thought your prediction was going to come true this show, by the way.
Oh, yeah, me too.
When you said
you make my heart hurt, I'm like, oh, yeah, your heart's going to hurt, all right.
Let's move on to predictions now.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Nando, what do you have?
Oh, boy. I don't think Shelby's going to die now. I think based on what we saw for next week,
now.
Seems like they need him. Now the whole dilemma is whether or not Norman saw what he saw in the basement. So I don't think he's gonna kill him or anyone's going to kill him. So he's going to be around for a while. But I think that, you know, just like in Twin Peaks or any of those other types of shows, which is also kind of reminiscent to, everyone has a secret. So
great point.
So I feel like Shelby is not the good guy he's supposed to be, whether Norman is seeing things or not. And we're going to see a seedier side of Shelby.
All right.
So,
Dua.
Based on what we learned this episode, that something is definitely wrong with Norman and he is losing time, my prediction's actually pretty big. I am going to predict that it was actually Norman that killed his father.
Oh.
Mm.
That's a good one.
That Norman killed his father, he forgot about it, and then he found his father, and his mother already knows.
Oh.
That's why she was trying to help clean it up.
Damn it, I was thinking that too, but I didn't say it. But I was thinking that too last week, and I didn't say it. So you own that one, Dua.
You own it. Stamp that
stamp
one,
it.
Dua Casey. I like that a lot. That'll be a very interesting twist. I'm going to go full reversal here. Actually, not full reversal. I know I said that I think that 100% chance that woman is fake and not real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really starting to think that that could be a bit of a red herring in that we know something is the book is that, you know, we have the book. The book is the sketchbook. There's something mm-hmm. to the sketchbook. We know there's something to the cabin. Mm-hmm. Something's going on there. We know the town is weird. Something's happening in town. We know there's some sort of connection with the old. So maybe it is real. Maybe it's one of these things that we're supposedly be led to believe as an audience that, just Norman losing time. They're Norman being crazy. And it is something that's actually real. Mm-hmm. I predict that whole the subplot with the Chinese women and mm-hmm. that I believe that whole thing's real. I take it back.
Sex slavery?
Yes. I'm saying it's real.
Is it?
180 reversal in the same show by Joe Braswell. That's it. All right. So, that's a different issue.
Tune in next week while I'll
change my mind again. Yeah. I'm making a full 360. Nando, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me on Twitter at Nandovel, NANDOVEL, and also AfterBuzz here for the following Celebrity Apprentice and Amazing Race.
Ooh,
he's
Dua.
A busy, busy guy.
Yeah,
hi, I'm Dua Casey. You can follow me at Dua Casey. That's DUAKAISSI. Or you can find me buzzing about the client list here Monday nights.
Yay. And I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. You can find me on Grantland.com. I have a new thing coming out every Thursday. Tomorrow, somebody else is coming out. And also here on AfterBuzz on The Following and The Americans tonight in Bates Motel.
Woo-hoo.
Which
is
all I got.
Yeah.
Which is us.
That's
actually.
Us.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week with Joe Sanfilippo and the rest of us.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.